Mink from the National Institute of Forensic Sciences and Criminology in Belgium.
Present you something very theoretical, I'm sorry for that, and I will speak in English being a French-speaking person, I'm also sorry for that, but I hope that my English will be sufficient to make you understand what I think that there is to understand behind the question of the borders of prison. The borders of the prison help us to think the prison. To think what is prison as a building, as an institution, as a punishment, and it helps us also to oppose it, all theoretically, like the critical criminologists did, by criticizing prison, identifying the object and then criticizing it, but it also helps us or help them practically to oppose the prison by escaping or waiting for their liberation. But the principle is that the border helps you to know when you are inside and when you are outside the prison. But what if the prison's borders get blurred? And I will rest for this upon the only one, in 2005, Belgium adopted the first penitentiary law of its history, and it's a very interesting law, not only because it is not already applied, because some parts of the law 11 years after are still not applied, including the parts I will talk here about. But it's very interesting because there was a commission of specialists who wrote something like 200 pages of reports imagining a new prison for Belgium, but also designing a new legitimate prison. And this is what's interesting, in my opinion. It's the fact that in 2005 they tried to explain which prison could be legitimate today. Quite an achievement. First of all, the prison space has to be open. Not only the physical space, but also the social space of prison. So, in the preparatory documents, they are filled with appeals to the opening of the doors, to the crossing of the borders. So people have to come in, families, services, but also prisoners have to go out to search for a job, to meet their therapists, and so on. It's also a no time to lose prison. It's not a question of putting you in a room and telling you to wait for 10 years. You have to make a project out of your incarceration. So one of the key innovations of this law is what is called the detention plan. So when they enter, convicts to more than 3 years of prison have to write a plan with the support of assistants and make projects about their time in prison. So it's not a question of just waiting for the time to flow. They must be active. And I think that it draws a prison driven by four principles, which are the principles of what I call the mobilitarian ideology. First, activity. They have to plan to do something, anything. It could be restorative justice, could be education, it could be contacts with their families and so on. But they have to do something. Inactivity is unacceptable. You must know that this detention plan and its fulfillment will be very important when they ask for a liberation and when they write their reinsertion plan. Second principle, activation. It's not a question of obeying the rules, of doing what you're told or doing what specialists told you to do. It's a question of having your own projects, having your own initiatives, and, for instance, taking contact with your victim and asking it, her or he, to what you can do for her or him. Yeah, it's very difficult. I'm not used to this. Third principle, participation. Everything in the prison is thought as a collective project, even the prison itself. Because everybody is participating in making the prison functioning. But also in the detention plan, it's a participatory project because there is the administration, the social assistant, the inmates, but also private services, associations outside the prison. So, and also the victim. So there's a whole bunch of actors who are participating in the execution of the sentence. Fourth principle, adaptation. If you have to cooperate, activate yourself, and be active, you must be able to adapt yourself. But also, the prison itself has to adapt itself to every prisoner. And this is surely one of the main reasons why the detention plan isn't today applied. It's because adapting the prison to every individual would cost a lot of money. And we prefer to invest in walls than in this kind of processes. So this takes place in a broader context. There's this new prison project which is oriented towards autonomy, mobility, social and physical one. But there are also new ways of serving a prison penalty, you know, electronic monitoring, this kind of modalities. But there are also new punishments today in Belgium. Electronic monitoring, probation are also independent punishments. You can be condemned to electronic monitoring without any prison punishment. There's also community services. This whole landscape, from this whole landscape, I think I can conclude, or I make the hypothesis that we are shifting from a painful immobilization as key principle of prison to mobility tests. You are asked to be mobile, to have initiatives, to have physical and social mobility. And if you succeed in it, you can go further. But if you don't, you go back to painful immobilization. Who is the good convict today? It's the guy who can make a project, go outside, find services, resources to achieve goals. It's not anymore the man who waits in his cell, just respectfully of all the rules, and that's it. So the prison as building institution and prison, the term, the idea of prison becomes too narrow to describe what we are talking about if we want to interrogate the borders of the prison. So I think that the carceral, as a mobility-based system, is a better approach. And I propose to have a mobility approach of the carceral. What is this all about? It's about spaces with an S. A mobility approach of the council today, I think, necessitates a multispatial analysis. The council is not only about physical space, but also about social spaces. The position in the family, in professional sphere, in the social hierarchies, everything can move, and by your contact and your specific way through the council, your position, not only physically, but also socially, will evaluate. Mobility has to be analyzed in all these spaces. But it's not just a question of immobilization, like we were used to think. Because prison was thought as immobilization. But despite this focus, the prison also imposes mobilities, downwards mobilities mainly, like downwards social mobilities, you get out of your family, you lose your job, you lose your apartment, and so on. So it's all what gives you a position in the society that can be affected by incarceration. It's even more the case in a new prison and in a carceral, largely promoting mobilities. We have seen that in a carceral you are asked to be mobile. It's a demand. But also, we must be aware that constraints can immobilize or mobilize. EM both demands physical mobility to foster social immobilities. You are asked to be mobile, to go to your work, to go to your school, and so on, so that you can stay socially immobile and you don't experience a downward social mobility. But it also limits physical mobility to secure society. So, if we only think about immobilization, we will lose half of the field. The carceral can be seen as a complex of multispatial and entangled immobility or mobility constraints. So we have to be careful about the entanglement. The immobilities and mobilities in different spaces, this is quite easy to write, but really difficult to read. These mobilities and immobilities in different spaces should be studied not only separated, saying what's the effect of physical immobilization on your health, on your brain, or whatever, but also in their relationships. What and why do we impose mobilities? What's the effect of this kind of mobility and this kind of immobility? So for all these reasons, we must cease to think freedom in terms of physical mobility. Creswell showed it very well. Since Thomas Hobbes, we are used to think about freedom as mobility, physical one. But if we have to consider the carceral, we have to go out of this way of seeing things, seeing freedom. We must consider imposed immobilities and mobilities, but we also have to consider individual evaluations of the concrete situations, because there are people who suffer too much in electronic monitoring and ask to get back to the prison. And on the reverse, there are more people who wait for electronic monitoring because they suffer too much inside prison. But it's only if we can take into account the individual evaluation of every constraint on mobility and on immobility that we can have a sight on their freedom. We also have to care about evolutions of the situation and their evaluation. So, two last questions I won't answer. I began with questions I didn't want it to answer to. How do you escape a borderless carceral? When people are in jail, they are longing for being outside, and maybe they will try to escape. They know what they are confronted to. They know that they are them and the others. They are them and the building, the institution, the punishment, and they want to be freed from that. But What if you are under electronic monitoring? You feel yourself, studies have shown that they feel free, but also they have the feeling that their freedom is false. So what do they want to do? Do they really want to escape this system? And how could they escape? Did they already escape the prison, or are they still in the castle? So it's, I think, one of the questions we should ask. It's the last slide. Is how do you escape? But on the reverse, how do we criticize the carceral without borders? Because today's carceral is largely built on the critics of the prison. Electronic monitoring have been massively legitimated by saying prison is evil. We all know about the reality of the substitution between electronic monitoring and prison. But how do we oppose this if this argument and these borders has been instrumentalized to widen the carceral? This is it.
Thanks, Christoph. You had 6 seconds left. So, spot on. So, which means we've got full 5 minutes. Who would like to kick off? Yes.
That was really interesting. Especially because in my own work right now, I'm looking at North American spaces that are carceral without obvious borders as well. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that I'm looking at, I'm wondering if you can speak about this in the Belgian context, is how otherwise quotidian or taken for granted social spaces become restricted based on the positioning of particular people within kinds of legal or punitive regimes. So that, for example, if you have an electronic monitoring device or something like that, what is for some people a domestic space now becomes a carceral space because you're attached to that in some way. So I'm wondering if you could speak a little bit about that.
Yes, we are. We have a new system of electronic monitoring in Belgium with a GPS device in it, and this could allow to carceralize the public space too by defining places you can go and places you cannot go. And I think that behind this, there's a question. It's for me a question of blurring the borders. You don't know if you are at home or if you are in a prison. I think that this could be generalized. For instance, inside the prison, there's a project of a new big prison in Brussels, big for Belgium, in Brussels. Where every convict would have a tag and would be allowed to enter some spaces regarding some rules, but also exclusion rules. So you may not be able to enter a room because there is an inmate you shouldn't meet, but you don't know about it. So it's one step further than the consciousness of the fact that I can't go further than this or the device will ring. It's even something like there is a hidden structuration of the space and I don't know about. I just see that the door is closed, but I don't know if it's because I'm too early or because they are cleaning the room or because there are someone I shouldn't meet. So I think that one of the problems with this is the ability to see the constraint. So the constraint is made invisible, and maybe this could make us think about the panopticon, where you don't know if you watched or not, but I think that we should be careful about this, and maybe we should go and re-examine the panopticon and ask what has been made of this dream today with today's technology. So
quick one from someone?
Go on, I'll give it a go.
Yeah,
I really enjoyed the paper. I'm wondering whether or not, you talked about plural spaces, different types of spaces, whether or not talking about different types of mobilities might also help you to distinguish sure. some of these different types of confinement. So I'm thinking of the work of John Urry, who talks mm-hmm. about communicative mobility, but also bodily mobility, also imaginative yeah. mobility, virtual mobility, these different things. And I think the tendency is to think of prisoners confiscating all of those. Mm-hmm. Whereas actually, if we think about different types of mobility, maybe we can have a more nuanced view of what prison does and what EM does,
yeah.
and get past some of the problems that you're talking about.
Yeah, we surely should think in terms of different kinds of mobilities, even if I do not agree with the Urry's categories and surely not with the idea of virtual mobility. For me, virtual mobility is not virtual. If you may be mobile in a non-physical space, and this is totally not virtual. You can experience co-prisons by video conferencing or tweeting or on Facebook and so on, and it's co-prisons, a different kind of. But this is not virtual, because you really meet people in a different way. And Urry thinks about this in terms of it's just a surrogate. It's not good enough. It's not the real co-present, the real encounter. And I think that we should avoid this. But surely there are attempts in Belgian prisons of the with a Belgian prison cloud. Access to some electronic devices to get services and so on, to be able to plan mobilities inside the prison, services and so on. I don't think it helps a lot, but that's a way of thinking about things. I just have to mention that I have 50 copies of my paper for the ones who could be interested in it.
That's a nice way to finish. Thanks very much, Christoph. That was lovely. Thanks so much.